So we're going to move on to the second speaker. Dana Talem will talk about gastroesophageal reflux disease and obesity, keys to successful management.
Thank you so much. I'm really honored to be here and thankful for the opportunity. I'm talking about a subject, obviously, probably people don't have to deal with. Nobody deals with obese patients in the audience, correct? In a little bit. So here are my disclosures. None of them are relevant to the subject matter of this talk. And today, what I really want to kind of talk about is defining who really needs an operation. I put needs in quotes because there's always so many contentious and conflicting interests when it comes to this. It's the referring physicians, it's your beliefs, it's the patient expectations, and how we look at that in terms of anatomic considerations and clinical symptoms. What are the operative options if you do decide and elect to proceed with an operation? And as we just heard, managing expectations, which is really the key and a critical aspect of this operation. And just for consistency, we'll be defining morbid obesity as a body mass index greater than 40. So this is a big problem. As we know, obesity and morbid obesity is skyrocketing in this country. And up to 20% of morbidly obese patients have symptoms of reflux. And there's numerous proposed underlying mechanisms, such as increasing the pressure gradient. There's a high prevalence of hiatal hernia. And we'll talk about this and get into this in a little bit. Difficulties with basal pressures, motility abnormalities, but there's no shortage of reasons as to why the prevalence of GERD is higher in these populations. So before you even move forward, we really have to think, do they need an operation? Because if there's intrinsic issues in terms of the obesity that's creating a higher prevalence, are we going to be doing anything by surgically correcting something without addressing the underlying issue? And forgive me for my sacrilegiousness of correcting this, but whenever a doctor cannot do good, she or he must be kept from doing harm. Only followed by treatment without prevention is simply unsustainable. And I want you to think about that as we go forward and think about this population. And before we even talk about surgery, sometimes it's hard to address the difficult topic in the room, which is the obesity itself. And when counseling these patients, you really want to start with the initial management being non-operative. Are there lifestyle modifications, avoidance of certain foods, different acid-reducing medications, different things that we do, and weight loss? And these can be really uncomfortable conversations to have with patients when they come to the office. They come to see you for reflux, all of a sudden you start talking about their weight, and sometimes they get really angry, especially if they're not expecting it, especially if the referring physician sent them to you for sinusitis, and all of a sudden you're talking to them about metabolic surgery. They feel like the wool has been pulled in front of their eyes, and they can get very upset. And I think preparing yourself and figuring out how you're going to address that and how you can broach that topic and still make it familiar and not kind of scare people away or make them think you're just passing that off or don't care is really important when talking about this issue. And then when we start talking about operations, we start talking about operative indications. And this is from Current Surgical Therapy, a chapter I wrote with Dr. Ratner in 2014. And it's really you're looking at relative contraindications to surgery, starting to look at body mass index greater than 35. So why is that? And I'm not going to go through all of the data, but it's not that funduplication isn't safe. It's not that you can't do it in this population, but more and more data show that it's less effective. So you're doing a definitive operation to treat something that you know downstream is like, it's not going to fail 100% of the time, but is more likely to fail. And then we do have some newer endoscopic therapies, and we're going to hear about some of them today. But these really haven't been evaluated. And actually, when some of the initial trials came out, BMI greater than 35 was a contraindication to utilization of any of these devices. So it's really hard to say what we can or can't use endoscopic or in other therapies in this population because it just hasn't been evaluated. So let's talk about bariatric surgery, something that's near and dear to my heart. So when we look at bariatric surgery and we start thinking about why we want to offer weight loss operations, it's because we have some data to suggest that there's an association with increasing body mass index and patterns of failure. What we see is down the line in a retrospective single institution study that looked at 124 patients who were reoperated on for funduplication failures, we saw similar anatomic patterns in that your RAP was more likely to be intact if your body mass index was less than 30, but significantly more likely to be disrupted if your body mass index was greater than 35, also more likely to have a recurrent hiatal hernia. And the combination of a failed fundoplication of hiatal hernia was also statistically more significantly higher with BMI greater than 35. But we do have some, you know, controversial or contraindicating data. And looking at laparoscopic anti-reflux surgery in obese patients with GERD, one study, another retrospective study, looked at 366 patients. But only 16 of those patients had a body mass index greater than or equal to 35. So I'm going to limit the excitement over the generalizability of these results. But they saw comparable results at 6 months and a year. Again, probably not long enough to go through that data. So I'm going to make an argument here, and I know a lot will disagree in the audience, that Roux-en-Y gastric bypass is probably our gold standard to treat this disease process, mainly that we know that this is not just a weight loss operation, but it's a pretty effective anti-reflux operation. And I'm not going to go through all the data, but there's numerous studies to demonstrate improvement in symptoms and decreased medication use with this options. And this effect, one or two studies have shown, may actually be independent of weight loss. So a lot of times people will have symptom resolution similar to what we see in diabetes right away and not just after whenever they lose the weight, whether 6 months or a year down the line. The problem becomes, and I don't know if anybody's running into this, less and less patients want Roux-en-Y gastric bypass. Anybody running into that problem? Everybody coming in? Any bariatric surgeons in the room? Kinda. Many people are coming in and wanting the sleeve gastrectomy. And we see that because as the patterns of bariatric surgery have evolved and changed, nearly 70% of the primary operations and procedures that we're doing in this country are sleeve gastrectomy. And it's driven not just by physician preference, but patient preference. So what are the data for primary, and this is not even getting into hiatal hernia. It's really complex. It's all over the place. There's a systematic review that looked at 15 studies. 4 showed it increased reflux, 15 showed it decreased reflux. When we looked at the Michigan Bariatric Surgery Collaborative data, we saw that laparoscopic sleeve gastrectomy was a predictor of needing anti-reflux medication at 1 year after surgery. There was another study that was done of about 4,800 patients, 44% who reported previous GERD symptoms, and after surgery, 84% of persons with GERD continued to have symptoms and 9% developed de novo GERD. And so the general consensus is that sleeve may increase the incidence of GERD. And again, we're not talking about hiatal hernias just in general for a person with reflux, but we persist. And I'm sure many of you have seen some of these procedures coming out. There's a trend towards combining a fundoplication and a sleeve. Namely, some people are leaving a bit of fundus at the top and doing an anterior or a posterior or even a full wrap or fundoplication above this. This hasn't really been vetted. And I was just speaking to two wonderful surgeons in the back who've actually started doing a hill-type procedure and not leaving fundus and creating that from the posterior aspect of the sleeve with 60 patients done so far and data to be seen. And this has also prompted a lot of controversy around hiatal inspection, because a lot of people feel that one of the reasons we're having de novo reflux after these sleeve procedures may be that we're not being aggressive enough in looking at the hiatus and correcting hiatal hernias when they're there. So let me go by show of hands. When you're doing a sleeve gastrectomy, how many people routinely inspect the hiatus and dissect it? How many people just kind of look? And if you see a little divot or something, we'll fix it, but otherwise leave it alone? Anybody just not look at all? So you can see it was about 50-50 hands in the audience, and I think whether or not we should be routinely dissecting the hiatus, because if you look, you're going to find it and you're going to fix it. So I think it becomes a little bit difficult to discern, and we don't really have data to support there one way or another. However, if there is a hiatal hernia there, we certainly should be fixing it. And that brings me into my second topic, because really these are two separate populations. There's the refluxers and then the hiatal hernias and refluxers. And again, most of these hernias are diagnosed incidentally, but oftentimes they can present with reflux or regurgitation. And for management, if they're asymptomatic, you don't have to do anything. But symptomatic hernias should be repaired. And these are obstructive symptoms, volvulus, bleeding. But repair considerations also have to include patient factors. So again, I'd make the argument that if somebody's morbidly obese and has reflux, you may want to consider whether or not that's something that has to be repaired. And if it is have to be repaired, whether or not that's something somebody you can discuss weight loss options with. And we know in morbidly obese patients that risk for having a hiatal hernia is increased, and 5% will have moderate to large hernias. And how does this really impact your management? So hiatal hernia and Roux-en-Y gastric bypass. This is safe, feasible, and effective. Roux-en-Y gastric bypass is an anti-reflux procedure, and it's really the preferred revisional option in morbidly obese patients, and preferred primarily reflux operation in morbidly obese patients. So if you're doing one of these really large hiatal hernias, or somebody's coming with you and you do this reconstruction, oftentimes a Roux is preferred, because even if it recurs a little bit and the pouch goes up, yes, it has the risk of obstructing, but they're not going to develop that horrible reflux after. And when you look at the studies dealing with this, this is a retrospective single institution study that had mean follow-up of 35 months with mean percent excess weight loss, and 78% had good to excellent quality of life, and 89% were really satisfied and would undergo the OR again, you know, this whole concept of decision regret. When you look at it with sleeve, and again, this becomes a little bit more of a controversial topic, there are some data to really suggest that combining sleeve with a hiatal hernia repair is okay. There's a retrospective single institution study of about 330 patients with hernia versus sleeve alone. The results were higher percent excess weight loss, improved GERD, and greater satisfaction. There was another systematic review of 17 articles. And again, most surgeons concur that Roux-en-Y gastric bypass may be a better option, but sleeve is really reasonable for people who may prefer it. And the way that I think about it is it kind of looks like a long collis in some ways, and that's a very controversial statement, but true. One more study looked at this retrospective single institution of 19 patients with large or recurrent parasophageal hernia, mean BMI of 37, and near to total resolution in all patients who had undergone sleeve gastrectomy in terms of their reflux. And again, we see similar things with another retrospective study. Again, the sample size isn't large, the follow-up isn't robust, but it is starting to have a pattern and suggestion. So what I take away from this is kind of an algorithm that I think about when I approach any morbidly obese patient with reflux. And the first question is independent of the reflux, is this somebody who's willing to consider bariatric or metabolic surgery? And if they are, will they consider a Roux-en-Y gastric bypass? And if they do, that's great. And if they're a candidate for it, I think that that would be my choice of operation to move forward with. If not, would they consider a sleeve? And then I go through that separate algorithm of, do they have a large hiatal hernia? What is their, you know, physiologic testing? Is this somebody who is a high probability of making worse or better? If they're not willing to consider weight loss surgery, I ask myself again, do they really need an operation? Is this somebody that has to have an operation and be operated? If the answer is no, then I think lifestyle management, supportive care, and you don't want to abandon these patients or get rid of them. I work with them. I have them come back and see me. You can enroll them in weight loss programs or different lifestyle modification programs if your institution offers that. But if they do need an operation, and I mean people with maybe large parasophageal hernia where there's bleeding or obstructive symptoms, things that really would kind of force your hand, then in those cases, I will proceed with a parasophageal hernia repair I'm partial to a two-pay funduplication or a full funduplication. So thank you so much, and I appreciate your attention.